Welcome to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast.
Hello, and welcome, Lawyers, Guns, and Money listeners, to the latest Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. My name is Rob Farley, and I am joined tonight by Eric Loomis, Scott Lemieux, and Elizabeth Nelson. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the latest NFL playoffs. We're going to talk about the AFC, we're going to talk about the NFC, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl, and then whatever else we can squeeze in the limited time we have. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, this is Eric Loomis. I hang out in graveyards and visit racists.
Hi, I'm Scott Lemieux. I teach political science at the University of Washington, and within a month we'll know if that will be continuing or not. You all know me from this website, so I'm going to leave more room for the Dean's List approved musician in the group.
Hey, it's Elizabeth Nelson, and yes, I am on the Dean's List. I do the rock band, the sort of rock band of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money website called The Paranoid Style, and I'm just happy to be invited.
Yeah, and I should note, a colleague came up to me just unbidden and ran into the hallway and said, "Why doesn't The Paranoid Style tour?" It's just apropos of nothing. So you're getting a small fan base, at least going here in Seattle. So hopefully I can guarantee you some crowds if you come out.
Why doesn't Lawyers, Guns, and Money tour, right? I mean, it would be a wonderful spoken word tour for, you know, six or seven of us. I think there's money in this idea.
Yeah, same venues that, like, host Chapo. Like, we can do the same thing. Sure, we'd get a very similar crowd, too. Yeah.
All right, so I'm just going to kick this off. We're going to go through the AFC bracket first, and I'm going to frame this in the following way. So I began this season as a Tennessee Titans fan. Things didn't really work out for. Things did work out pretty well for the Titans, about as well as you could expect, but they didn't work out for me. And so the entire time, I was actually not exactly cheering against the Titans in the conference championship, but I really did not want Marcus Mariota to go down as essentially the George McClellan of the Tennessee Titans this year, which is I feel like that would have been the case if the Titans had made it to the Super Bowl. So, just sort of starting there and moving from there, what do you guys think about the AFC bracket this year?
I'm glad the Patriots lost.
Oh my God!
Let's really talk about the most important thing here.
Whatever ambivalence you must have, because I was actually curious about that, Rob. That, you know, that it was definitely kind of Larry Wildman going off the cliff in your new Maserati. That, you know, or a monkey's paw. That, you know, your Titans actually are successful, but it's with, you know, the guy who suddenly looks good when Adam Gase is no longer running him down, who rather than Mariota. When against the Patriots, there's just no equivocation. You know, you must have been, you know, and that was really nice to watch. And then the Ravens, like, I still don't really understand that fully. But I just think that we've learned that as good as the Ravens are and as good as Jackson is, like, they definitely are, you know, that they're a team. You know, the one problem with, like, an option offense in the NFL is that it really depends on you getting the lead. And why I think Mahomes is still better is that the Chiefs, as we've seen, do not need the lead. In fact, they can just fuck everything up as badly as it's possible to fuck anything up and still, like, be ahead of you at the end of the first half. And granted, it helps if you're playing Bill O'Brien, but still, and I think that we just kind of forgot, you know, because the first half of the year, you know, it was kind of Russell's the MVP, and then Lamar obviously took over, and because of Mahomes' injury, I just think we lost sight of just how incredible Mahomes is, and I think that we saw that again. So I'm fascinated by the matchup, but yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, but I think that the Titans aren't a complete mirage either. Like, I'm impressed with Vrabel. I actually think Tannehill, while not as good as he was this year, I mean, I think, like, Philbin and Gase are really, really bad coaches. And I think that he may have more. So I'm actually interested, but I actually think the Titans could be, I'm not impressed with anybody else in that division. So, you know, you have to think that actually the Titans could be pretty good, even if, again, you know, and then Rob will be a Bears fan next year when Mariota is trying to get the job with Mitch Trubisky. So, and then the circle will continue.
Yeah, wherever he ends up being backup quarterback, that's my new team. Elizabeth, you actually wrote about the Ravens team this year, right? So what were your thoughts on that Ravens-Titans game?
The Ravens-Titans game or the Chiefs-Titans?
Oh, was it? No, the Ravens-Titans, yeah. Actually. Right, because you had that piece about Lamar Alexander. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, too, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in following Lamar Jackson. I actually don't follow the AFC that closely because I am a Washington fan, but I was just more interested in talking to this guy about Lamar Jackson and his phenomenon as a quarterback, which I thought, you know, spoke to this idea that, like, you know, you basically, in order to be an effective quarterback, have to be able to run and pass, and anymore, you know, that's going to be the new model going forward. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know that I have any real specific thoughts about it, but I was just interested in Jackson as a quarterback.
Yeah, and I'm still remain very, you know, for the reasons of the state, like, I'm very bullish about the Ravens and Lamar. You know, if he stays healthy, like, I think they will be really good. You know, and I think that they don't necessarily have to be as run focused as they were this year. They I think like Seattle, I think that they could use one or two more offensive wide out. But, I don't think there's anything about this that's particularly unsustainable. And I would expect them to be back. Although, you know, admittedly, a Cleveland Browns team being run by Kevin Stefanski seems pretty hard to beat. But, you know, I still think that the I would like the Ravens to.
Loomis, what was your thought about the AFC this year?
Yeah, I don't have too much to say about the playoffs because I was in Cuba for the first 2 weeks of them. And, you know, American football is not huge in Cuba. So I kind of wandered back into the country just in time to watch the Seahawks-Packers, which was great. Let me tell you, I by no means wanted to return to Cuba at that moment. So, but other than the Patriots losing, you know, I think that the real question is, you know, does Andy Reid finally win a Super Bowl, or does he lose it in spectacular, poor time management fashion? And I guess that to me is a fascinating storyline of the next 2 weeks. So I sort of think the Chiefs will take it. I know we're getting ahead here, but I also just have this vision of Reid blowing it in some amazingly obvious way.
Here's a question that I think I might bring up in the open threader before. Is Andy Reid the best NFL coach ever to have not won a Super Bowl? I mean, there's Marty Schottenheimer, who Elizabeth might want to put in a point for. I mean, I would think he's ahead of Coryell at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Coryell's the other one who would really come up. But Sam Weish, I guess, recently.
Yeah.
Sam Weish.
Oh, yeah. R.I.P. Sam Weish.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be up. But I mean, I think Andy's in the discussion. And I'm actually, you know, I'm going to be, I mean, obviously we'd be rooting against the Niners anyway, but I'll be rooting for him. You know, I think that some, you know, and I think his clock management issues are real, but also, you know, probably he's had some bad luck in the playoffs too. So, you know, I will be rooting for him to pull it off, but, you know, and the other thing he has too, is not like Kyle Shanahan's record. And, you know, I mean, he literally lost the Super Bowl that he could have won by kneeling three times and punting on every series. So, you know, it's not like. You know, it's great, and Shanahan is also a tremendous coach. But yeah, like, you know, it's not really obvious even that the 49ers are like ironclad and late in a close game either. So, but it'll be interesting to see. And then the other interesting thing about the AFC going well, I guess it's 2 points. And one, I think we should just reiterate again that what a terrible year this was for Silicon Valley tanking theory. And to combine the Brown and Reed points. Like, Reed's previous offensive coordinator was, like, the hottest prospect on the market by far, gets hired by Chicago, plays a material role in taking Mitch Trubisky over Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, you know, and still has a job. And the one before that already has a Super Bowl. So it's very hard to explain to me why Eric Bieniemy does not have a job, especially when Cleveland basically hired, like, the rich man's Brian Schottenheimer. Like, what is it about the Vikings offense the last 15 years that makes you think, wow, that's the guy, you know? So,
well, I mean, there's one reason Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a job.
Right.
There's only one reason.
Right. And particularly in Nate's case, like, everybody's complaining about Reed's offensive coordinators that they don't call plays. Well, Doug Peterson didn't call plays. That works out fine. But if you remember, Reed did delegate play calling for the end of his last year there. And the last game was them losing a playoff game at home to fucking exotic Smash Mouth. And literally to a coach who got fired after the next game.
So, yeah, no, that's like, right. He got fired.
Yeah.
So why
would you? Why is Nagy a star recruit and not Bieniemy? It's just.
So I want to pause us there because you know we mocked this exotic Smash Mouth there, and as Elizabeth mentioned, right, sort of the new model quarterback, which is this Mahomes. You know, I want to say Lamar Alexander again, right? You know, Lamar Jackson, right? But what was interesting to me is that two of the four teams that were in the championship not only had sort of very traditional quarterbacks, and in the case of the Titans, right, they had discarded a quarterback who was regarded as a dual threat. But, you know, it's what a lot of people have noted, right, that the Titans and the Niners seem like a return of the running back, right? And, I mean, it might be a little bit different here, right, because just watching Derrick Henry run through teams through the second half of the season, it just sort of really did seem like he was a step ahead of every other running back. And I know, Scott, that you always mock this idea that sort of running backs add consequential differential value, but has this postseason given any indication to rethink that position?
Well, I think there's more, you know, and I think that a lot of people have been writing about this. You know, obviously, like, running backs don't matter is not literally true. You know, it's not, you know, that they're very, you know, having a good running game is better than not. And there's a couple of different things going on here. Is that, like, Henry, like, if somebody could sustain that level of production for years, they would be worth a lot of money. It's just that nobody does. Mm-hmm. And the 49ers are interesting in that they're actually running exotic smash mouth. Like, what Shanahan is doing is, like, it's a running game, but it's not run DeMarco Murray into the line twice, then have Mariota throw on third and nine. You know, like, they're really just fascinating, you know, really, you know, a lot of different running plays. But one thing to know about the 49ers is that they're doing it with a bunch of, like, their top running back last week is on his seventh team in, like, 6 years. Right. So it's not like the 49ers invested a lot of money in running backs, that it's all about scheme and the offensive line, which is what I think the analytics argument is. It's not that, you know, that the Patriots have often won playoff games with run-heavy attacks. Like, I think some dumb analytics people, in the same way that dumb analytics people think that, like, losing games for 5 years is the way you win, some dumb analytics people think that, like, you should always throw 40 times a game no matter what the situation. But no, like, if your best matchup is running the ball, then go ahead and run the ball. I just don't think you have to invest a lot in running backs to do that. I think that's the key point. And I think the reason that we rag so much on Brian Schottenheimer is that the Seahawks have a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback and, like, incredibly shitty running backs. Like, that's the, you know, it's like, it doesn't, like, it's one thing to have a run heavy attack when you have Marshawn Lynch in his prime. It's another thing to have a run heavy attack when you have, like, an 85-year-old Marshawn Lynch who's barely handled for you. Like, that's the, you know, but, like, I have no problem, but I think it is, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with running if that's what you can do well. Like, the Ravens did that, and the Titans did that, and the 49ers did that, although with the caveat that when the Titans had to go up against a legitimately top-grade passing attack, you know, they couldn't keep up. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Like, to me, the 49ers can win, but Garoppolo's going to have to do something. Like, they're not going to beat the Chiefs with just running, I don't think. So I think that's where and I think he can do more, but, you know, I do think that's where the rub is. But, you know, I do think that, like, this should allow, I think that this should upset some of the more crude kind of anti-running arguments from analytics people, that it's more complicated than just saying, like, just throw on every down and nothing matters with the passing game, which I think is
right.
Not true.
I mean, it is also kind of interesting, right, because, we brought this up in an earlier conversation, right, the first Titans-Chiefs game just very much looked like, I mean, Derrick Henry was simply unstoppable, right, and, I mean, Tannehill didn't really even do anything, right, and so, you know, Henry was just devastating. Well, Eric or Elizabeth, do you guys have, what are any final thoughts on the AFC before we shift over to the NFC?
All right. So my one question is, do we think Ryan Tannehill is any good? And just thinking about that, he came out of the 2012 draft with RG3 and Andrew Luck. You know, is he going to have the best legacy?
He's probably going to have the best next year of that group of three.
I will say it's very hard to know, but I will say this, like, people really underestimate how bad Adam Gase is. And it really is one of the most, like, can anybody help me? It's like, literally, he became an incredibly, speaking of Bieniemy, like, Gase became an incredibly hot coaching prospect because Jay Cutler had a completely ordinary Jay Cutler year on a, like, 5-11 team. And somehow Adam, you know, and like what Darnold has been like a sub replacement level quarterback for 2 years now, you know, and you could really, like, Mike Tannier did a great thing documenting why Gase ruins quarterbacks, which is that, you know, they just throw nothing but checkdowns on second and third down and just never learn how to, like, take shots down the field. And it's really a problem. So, yeah, Tannehill will not be as good next year as he will this year, but like I actually think he has the chance to be good. Like I think with good coaching, you know, and to Elizabeth's question, like, you know, I mean, he's got a way to go to get luck. Having said that, I think that he, you know, do I think that a team can win with Ryan Tannehill? Like my inclination is to say yes. I could be wrong about that, but you know, I really think that, I think that maybe the best comp would be Alex Smith, who, you know, looked terrible when he had bad coaching and then was, you know, a very functional, if not outstanding, quarterback once he had good coaching. And I would say, if anything, Tannehill probably is, you know, definitely has a little more athleticism. So I think his peak could be like 10% better than Alex Smith. And, you know, a lot of teams could use that.
That question makes me really happy that Russell Wilson is my quarterback.
Fair.
So Tannehill's going to get paid a lot of money this year.
Yeah.
And it's that's like, Cousins. I mean, do you really want to invest that much money in a guy with long injury history who can be pretty good, but, you know, lost his job in Miami. Yes, he had a good half a season and he's going to make a huge contract. And then, you know, you're one of, you know, 18 teams, in the NFL who he actually would improve. And yet, you know, you have no chance of ever getting to the Super Bowl with him. So
he's an Andy Dalton class quarterback. Is that what you're sort of?
Yeah, probably, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I subjectively like him more than Dalton, but I could definitely be wrong. And I agree with Merrick in this sense that the real issue is that, you know, you have to pay him now. You know, that's the problem, is that, you know, that I would like to have him on a lot of teams, but I don't want to, you know, you don't want to be in the situation that the Jags are in of investing a lot of money in Nick Foles and then moving on to, like, you know, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie star who, you know, was a sixth round pick out of Washington State. So that's, you know, I think that's the real issue. I think if you could get him at a decent contract, he's somebody I'd like to take a chance on. Like, I like him more than Dalton or Case Keenum or one of those. Sorry to bring that up, Elizabeth, but I mean, I think he definitely is in that tweener class where he's like clearly better than replacement level, but like not clearly good enough that you want to pay him like, you know, quality starter money. Joe Flacco would be the obviously classic in that group, although he deteriorated really quickly.
I mean, yeah, maybe to tackle your question in a different way, Elizabeth, right? I mean, there are lots of, I mean, teams that want quarterbacks, and I think we could even do a full podcast on this, right? Teams that want quarterbacks this year have a lot of options, right? There are a lot of free agent quarterbacks. There are a lot of quarterbacks who could go in the first round, right? And so Tennessee is in this situation where, you know, they're not good enough. I mean, they can win with a really good quarterback, right? They've demonstrated they can win with a really good quarterback. And is Tannehill going to be that guy? I don't know. What do you think? You asked the question.
Well, I think that, you know, it depends on whether or not Tennessee is going to pay Derrick Henry $60 million or whatever next year. And then they could win with Tannehill. But I'm not sure. I think that they should go with him again next year. I'm not totally convinced that, you know, he's the face and the future of the franchise.
Yeah, I am enough of an analytics guy to say this. Like, I would rather pay Tannehill than pay Derrick Henry. Like, I do not see a big contract for him. And granted that I like Henry more than I like Zeke Elliott or Gurley, I would be very, you know, that style does not seem like it's a style that's going to be sustainable, like, for four more years. You know, so I would be very, and I understand their dilemma, because it's really hard to let him go if you have him. And I was lucky enough to cheer for a team that made that investment. And it's basically the Marshawn Lynch contract is like the one veteran running back contract that actually worked out okay. But that would make me really, and again, it's the kind of thing where, like, Derrick Henry is super useful on the contract he's on now, but, you know, so really the Titans have two of these dilemmas. Like, you've got two players who were really valuable this year, but are much more of a concern side, like, to large guaranteed contracts. So it's going to be a really interesting off season.
But there's another factor in this, which is the fan base of Tennessee. Right. I mean, they've been bad for so long, and now they have a hero finally in Derrick Henry. And I understand why you wouldn't sign him. I also think that the Tennessee fans are going to completely revolt if that happens. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they're going to be better off with him than without him. But it's going to be hard in a city with a fan base that, you know, let's face it, is a little touch and go, to let go of the one great player that they've actually run across in the last 15 years.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, Tennessee people are generally revolting in any case. I think we can all agree on that. So.
I mean, watching the Niners last week, I mean, the thing is, it's like, this is Brian Schottenheimer's dream, is to play the game that the 49ers played, except that the 49ers have invested in a passable offensive line and good running backs, or have actually developed good running backs without heavily investing in them. And you know, this is the difference between, I think, a coaching staff that takes the players it has and creates a system around them versus, I have an ideology and I'm going to stick to my ideology whether it works or not. And that's why the 49ers in the Super Bowl and the Seahawks aren't. And I, you know, I can't say I'm totally disappointed with the Seahawks season. I mean, 11-5. Win a playoff game. I do think that the Seahawks have a secondary issue, which is a conditioning issue. That there was an excellent article on field goals that the Seahawks conditioning coach is somebody with a long history, an old Pete Carroll friend with a long history of having an unusual number of injuries. And, you know, by the time the Seahawks are being forced to play that 85-year-old Marshawn Lynch, they've already gone through three or four running backs this year, all of which are out for the season. So there are some deeper issues with the Seahawks. But at the same time, they went 11-5 with Russell Wilson and a bunch of crappy players. So, yeah. You know, I'm kind of ambivalent about the season overall, but it was frustrating to watch Brian Schottenheimer run an ideological offense and waste, you know, probably the second best player in the NFL this year.
Yeah, and there's obviously, and I'll probably weigh in at some point this weekend, but there's a big debate, you know, like Ben Baldwin, who I like, although he can be a bit reductive, you know, wrote a big post Athletic saying that the Seahawks should fire Pete Carroll. And Doug Farrar, who's kind of like the best analytics Seahawks, he's not exactly a Seahawks, I mean, but he's lived in Seattle, you know, kind of said that that's crazy. But and he actually told me on Twitter that, you know, he thinks Carroll would actually be more open to you know, a different offensive direction and persuaded. But I mean, look, you know, I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact of this, is that, like, Pete Carroll is a really outstanding coach. Like, the Seahawks had the best DVOA in the league 4 years in a row. You know, he won a Super Bowl, and even like that Patriots Super Bowl, people forget, you know, and also speaking of injuries, that, like, they were like one desperate tackle away from beating Brady and Belichick with like no defense. Like, all of their defensive players were either hurt or heavily compromised. And by the way, all you need to know about how great Richard Sherman is that he was playing with one arm in that game and Belichick did not throw to him at all. Like, it was, you know. So, I mean, you know, like, what Carroll does well is the hardest thing for an organization to do, which is to, like, have a professional program that identifies talent and develops talent. Like, he's really, really good at that part of the job. It's just they need, and it's not just offense, too, because, I mean, after all, despite how bad their play calling is, because of Wilson, they still had one of the, you know, seven or eight best offenses in the league. Like, their defensive play calling is just as, like, they have vanilla schemes that work really well when you're playing five Hall of Famers and don't work, you know. But when you have bad players, you're leaving Devontae Adams in single coverage against, like, mediocre corner. You know, it doesn't work. So I think that they actually need work, you know, schematically, both offensively and defensively. But my preference would be that, you know, Pete Carroll just hires better coordinators and lets them do their job. Because, you know, if you fire Carroll, you can, you know, then this may be a good transition to, you know, at some point we need to ask Elizabeth about Ron Rivera. But it seems to me like if I'm the Browns, I don't want a hotshot young coordinator. I want, like, a Marvin Lewis, like somebody who has taken over a terrible, you know, organizational situation and built a real program out of it, because that's, like, the hardest thing to do. So it's like the thing the Seahawks have, you know, they do the hardest stuff the best. But it's still no less frustrating when they keep losing winnable playoff games for, as Derek said, just to prove dumb ideological points. You know, it just seems to me that that's very. But, you know, we also should lose sight of the fact that they've, you know, now made the playoffs twice in what were essentially rebuilding years. And a lot of that is Wilson. But again, also, like, Carroll and Schneider deserve a lot of credit for drafting Wilson. And, you know, Carroll immediately put Wilson into the starting lineup, although they paid a lot of money for a veteran quarterback. So we should all say that it's not like Russell Wilson just happened. You know, Carroll and Schneider had to identify him and immediately see that he was their best option, when a lot of organizations would have gone with Flynn, you know, no matter what they look like in training camp. So, you know, it's, I mean, generally, you know, so Seahawks fans complain too much, particularly since we have a Daniel Snyder victim in our chat right now. But, you know, it's still like it's frustrating that there are just these what are relatively fixable problems don't get fixed when other organizations just seem at sea for months. So it's, you know, it's ambivalent. But yeah, that was, you know, again, it's another loss in a winnable game, which is frustrating.
Elizabeth, did you have commentary on Scott's commentary there?
Well, that was a lot. I mean, I take away from this, we agree that Russell Wilson is the second best quarterback from the 2012 draft after Tannehill. The interesting thing about like the Packers and watching the playoff games and the championship games, I think that their being like 13-3 or whatever was just sort of fluky. And I think that they reverted toward the mean in the game against San Francisco. And it was really like, okay, yeah, this is actually a 10-6 team. And so I'm not trying to change the subject. I know that you wanted to know about my feelings on Ron Rivera, which I'm genuinely excited that Bruce Allen is out of the building.
Yeah.
And we're bringing in, there were what, 5 coaches that were hired this year and only one of them was a minority and it was Ron Rivera. So, I mean, like I'm excited for that too. I mean, God, progress on the Redskins. Like this is really exciting. He's supposedly a really good guy. And, you know, we watched him a little bit, on the Panthers. And so, you know, like, I don't know if he's any good, but, I think he's got an improvement. So, watch this space and we'll see what happens next year. But we're very excited. We think that this is like the brave new face of the Washington franchise.
I don't know. I mean, it's really such a tough division to play in, though. I mean, really, you have to. I mean, I think maybe 8-8, you would have to go to, right? You know, 7-9 might.
Well, now that Mike McCarthy's the coach of the Cowboys, I think you got to go at least 13-3. I mean, that genius is going to just be gold for
I'm
you.
I'm thinking 14-2.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean,
I just want to revisit the wonderful, and we talked about it, I think, maybe 4 times now in 4 different NFL podcasts, that wonderful article, about the Browns fans who are, you know, accepting maybe it'll only be a 14-2 season. Right?
To me, it's, you know, like you could definitely quibble, like, you know, Rivera seems like for the same reason I would like Lewis for the Browns, like, Rivera is the absolutely perfect coach for that, and that he has enough clout to like get, you know, Allen out of personnel decisions. And you can complain about like he's not the greatest in-game decision maker, but the fact is, you know, the Panthers were one of the better organizations in football as long as he was there. So I think that's what the Washington needs is somebody with some clout to actually like push out Snyder's cronies, you know, somebody who will run a professional program. And it's a very, you know, and you look at, you know, really the Eagles are the only, you know, team with a decent coach and personnel guy. And, the McCarthy hire in Dallas, I just don't get. Like, and again, McCarthy, I wouldn't have even minded him in a place like Cleveland where you just need like an experienced professional. But like, you know, if I'm thinking I've got a talented team that you know, is on the brink but is underachieving, Mike McCarthy is not the guy I'm bringing in. Like, we just saw him have that kind of team for 9 years and do nothing with it. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. So that's one. And then the beauty, and you must like this, Elizabeth, of Jason Garrett is now going to be the offensive coordinator for the New York Giants. So it just, having a good defensive coach in that division should be worth like 4 wins a year instantly. Like, that's, you know, basically going up against that. So I don't. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I guess people seem to really like Joe Judge. And I will say the Belichick coaching tree is actually looking slightly better. Vrabel has obviously done a very good job in Tennessee. And, you have to be impressed with what Flores did in Miami. So who knows? But, you know, having said that, I think that the Giants are in a lot of trouble. And especially just, I don't know, like how Dave Gettleman keeps his job is just beyond me.
I want to interject here that this podcast is being recorded after the momentous retirement of the most mediocre quarterback in NFL history, Eli Manning. really a testament to 16 years of really reliable mediocrity. And I think that we should at least have a nod towards that, a nod in his direction.
Yeah. Elizabeth, do you want to take that first as a division rival?
Oh, like I'll pour one out to Eli. I mean, is that what we're talking about? I'm sorry, I'm a little lost. Eli won championships, so you know, I don't hate Eli. I guess it's good that he's retired, but
I posted on Twitter earlier that, it's too bad, like Pro Football Reference, like it has error adjusted quarterback stats for individual years, but not careers. So I would actually have to do some work to do a shit post about how Dave Craig was actually better than Eli. But, you know, I may put in the work anyway. I guess the one thing, you know, and I will say, and again, look, he did beat Belichick and Brady in two Super Bowls, and especially the second one, he played really well. Like that throw to, like the first one was a little bit fluky, but that throw to Manningham really was legitimately one of the best clutch throws I've ever seen. That was just unbelievable. So there's something puzzling to me about the sort of Eli Hall of Fame discourse, and it's very much similar to sort of the Jack Morris discourse, which is that guys like that who get in as marginal sections are literally the people who least need recognition by the Hall of Fame. Like Eli played in New York, he has a famous name, and he beat the game's greatest team twice in the Super Bowl. Like we'll be hearing about Eli plenty. Like he's not going to be a forgotten historical figure. So I don't know why we need to pretend that he's a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. I also have to acknowledge that, like, I never thought Eli would even be any good at all. I thought the Giants were dumb to, like, basically trade Rivers for it. Like, you know, I never thought that made any sense. So I will acknowledge that, you know, he put in, like, you know, he was very durable, and he had, like, a near-decade run of being, you know, an average to above-average quarterback who, you know, played really well in two postseasons. So, you know, he had a much better career than I expected, so I guess I have to be a little charitable in this respect. You know, he was a solid professional. And you know, when I say, like, compared to Dave Craig, you know, Dave Craig was actually a really underrated player, who unfortunately had a lot of bad luck. So, you know, I don't even mean that in an entirely insulting way. Eli was a good professional player. He's going to be now overrated because of the two rings. But, you know, there are certainly more overrated New York athletes in the news recently that I can name. So,
Eli Manning showing up is 90% of the job. All right. So I think we do have to, because we are on a limitation here, so we do have to sort of bound forward and talk about the actual Super Bowl. And sort of as a lead into that, I mean, I think we need to comment on just how wildly historical the 49ers-Packers game was, right? I mean, the over-under for – if you're over-under for passes by Jimmy Garoppolo, attempted is 10, right? I mean, what sort of odds would you have to do to get to take the under, right? I mean, it was really a lot of ways a shocking game that sort of is interesting in consequence of thinking about this next step of playing against the Chiefs. So I guess – what I'll ask each of you is, so start off with that and then tell us what you think is going to happen in the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, to me, what shocks me is that they were able to do it. Like, my assumption was that since the 49ers had basically stopped using Jimmy G after that interception, that the Packers would essentially be prepared for the running game and would force Garoppolo to throw. And it was the exact opposite. Like, Shanahan doubled down, and the Packers, you know, it was really not a very good day for LaFleur and Penn. Like, they just seemed to have no answer at all for these, you know, and it's not like Shanahan's blocking schemes are all that new, his use of jet sweep stuff, and they just really had no answer for it. And what's really interesting is that the Chiefs, who didn't have a very good rushing defense this year, actually did manage to shut down Derrick Henry. So in a sense, it's sort of like Spagnuolo looks a lot better now than the Packers do. But yeah, it was a very sort of unusual game. But my guess is that that's not, you know, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see this working a third time. Like, I think, you know, Spagnuolo with 2 weeks to prepare, like, you know, I don't think the 49ers are going to be able to just run it all game against the Chiefs. Now, I think Garoppolo is a capable quarterback. So that doesn't mean that they can't win, but I would be very surprised if this can work a third time. But, you know, but having said that, I give credit. I mean, again, as Eric said earlier, I give Shanahan credit for doing what worked, you know, that he doesn't come in with a preconceived notion of what to do. You know, if he has plays and the plays are working, you just keep running them until the opposition proves, you know, there's something to be said for that. You know, that he really is extremely good at, you know, and that's why Belichick gave him Jimmy G, right? You know, he is, you know, the sort of, you know, at least offensively, is the closest to a Belichick disciple we have in the league right now. He's very good at just, you know, he'll do that. So I don't see him being able to do it again, but I also know that if the Chiefs aren't giving him the running game, he'll have alternatives. He's not going to just be stuck. And he's not going to just keep running even if he can't run.
All right. So quickly, Scott, Kansas City minus the one or San Francisco plus the one?
I would take the Chiefs minus one, but you know, I think the odds makers have it about right. It's a coin flip, but I got to go with Mahomes in this one. But 49ers have a better defense. It's going to be actually a really interesting game.
Elizabeth, your thoughts?
Well, I'm just so shocked that Scott doubts the patented Shanahan zone run in the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, I watched that for years in Washington, and I'm just amazed that that you think they can't, you know, make magic out of it again. I mean, you know, it was their running game. San Francisco's running game was pretty unstoppable that time. I do think that, you know, the Chiefs probably have a chance to seal up some of those holes. Again, I don't think that the Packers were as good of a team as their numbers said. So, I mean, I don't know how you lose with Mahomes and the track team that Andy Reid has surrounded him with. I don't think there is a number of touchdowns that they can be behind and still lose. I think that they are, you know, the presumptive favorite. And I mean, you know, like we joke around here that, you know, like the, you know, the idea that the run game is dead is as stupid as the shibboleth that, you know, guitar rock is dead. But I do think that maybe this was a little bit of an anomaly. I'm super psyched because I agree. I think that San Francisco's defense is better than the Chiefs. So I actually think it's kind of a nice little clash of the Titans. And I don't know. I also just want to ask, what does Mike Shanahan do for the 49ers? I mean, well, why was he the one who had his hand on the trophy first?
And why is he on TV like 50 fucking times a game? Like, I get it. I understand. Like, you know, that, you know, it's like, I'm glad that a nepotistic hire worked out well for once. Like, you know, like, I don't think we need to, you know, like enough already. Good God.
All right, Loomis, turn in. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Chiefs had their moment of doubt early in the Tennessee game, you know, and they came back, they dominated in the second half of that game. You know, they looked pretty unstoppable and were. And, you know, the other thing about the Chiefs is that while, you know, they took a lot of grief for their run defense last year, at the beginning of this year, the second half of the season, it really did improve a lot. And, you know, they did shut down Henry entirely. And so the Niners are tough. You know, that defensive front four is brutal, you know, and you have, and it's hard to root against, you know, the two best ducks in the NFL on that 49ers defensive line with Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. But at the same time, you know, if anybody's going to be able to outrun some defensive linemen, it's Mahomes. And so while I think that Shanahan's not going to plan on running or throwing Garoppolo eight times in the game, and I think that people forget the Niners do have, I mean, Emmanuel Sanders, George Kittle's probably the best tight end in the NFL, Debo Samuel is an emerging star. They have a lot of weapons, and I could see the 49ers winning it, but I also am going to have to go with the Chiefs. I think Andy Reid's finally going to make it happen.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and buck the trend here, just so we're not unanimous and people don't say those idiots at Elgin really blew it.
Yeah, come around, so I like this.
They'll save that for the 2020 election. So
yeah, so I mean, the thing I want to say here is what Eric just I want to highlight two of the things Eric just mentioned. Right, I mean, one is the George Kittle, who when you watch him, he's just fundamentally unstoppable. Right,
he's new Gronk. He's unbelievable.
He's the new Gronk. He's just devastating, and they didn't use him at all. I mean, they beat the Packers basically using Kittle in one decisive play, right, which was the successful pass at the end. And second, I want to, you know, sort of highlight Eric Armstead, right, that what's sort of really interesting about how the 49ers win this year is that he was terrible for like every year that he's been in the NFL except for this year, right? So their defensive line suddenly went from suddenly basically added Nick Bosa and another really terrific player who had not been good at all. And so that's really sort of why, I mean, their defensive line is devastating and why I'm picking the 49ers in this game.
Which is very fair. 49ers are real. I mean, I think basically we're looking at two of the three best teams in football. You know, we can argue Chiefs versus Ravens, but, you know, basically this is, and it doesn't always happen. So, you know, I think this is kind of going to be really, and as Elizabeth said, it's just a really nice contrast of matchups, you know, so I think that it's going to be really fun.
All right, Scott, I'm going to give you the last word, and it's going to be a Canadian word, maybe a pair of Canadian words or just a few. So do you want to do their shout out here?
Yeah, so I was really happy. My big Larry Walker. And so, you know, for those who don't know, I lived in Montreal from 1990 until 1997. So I, first of all, got to see Montreal fans boo Larry Walker for leaving, even though the team literally wouldn't offer him a contract because they were going to take. So I'm not sure what he could have done. But my best Larry Walker memory was he was doing an autograph signing at a sporting goods store in downtown Montreal. And it was basically like me and my friends and nobody else were there 15 minutes, which is depressing as hell. But he also just like, you know how players normally just try to, you know, plow through those things and get out. Like, you know, he was talking to us for like, you know, 10 or 15 minutes just about baseball and, you know, anything else. Like, he was, you know, really, really cool guy. And I'm glad, like, he was a very deserving Hall of Famer. And I think there was sort of an overcorrection where, you know, people went from, you know, Danny Bichette is a great player to, you know, no accomplishments in Coors count for anything at all. And, you know, if you look at, you know, he played at an MVP level in Montreal, and, you know, he was not as good as the slash lines in Colorado, but he was still like a dominant, devastating player. You know, so, you know, like the other guy who got in, he's one of the dozen or so best players ever at his position. And I think they both deserve to get in. I mean, I think Walker, based on his SpongeBob NASCAR shirt, should have been unanimous. I think that's pretty clear. And by the way, are we going to get the national hero who didn't vote for Jeter so he can be carved on Mount Rushmore? Like, hopefully. You know, hopefully. Why will somebody claim credit for that? That was, you know, this would have been so unsufferable for like the two.
Oh, I mean, God. Can you imagine Rivera, the bots and the trolls that would come after you, right? I mean, it's probably somebody on Twitter who doesn't want to.
Yeah, but anyway, right. But I'm very grateful for Walker getting it.
All right, Elizabeth, Eric, do you guys have any last words?
I'm good. Nope.
Yeah, go Nats.
All right.
Congratulations. Well, yeah, that's right. First time we've been able to congratulate you. So extra kudos for being the Astros. Like, it's even better than it's, you know, like there are so many more reasons to hate Houston than we even knew at the time. So, like, really, the Nationals are the truly great American heroes of 2019. So pour out a chalice.
Actually, I do have a last word, which was that, you know, now that Alan Trammell is a Hall of Famer, I'm glad the slightly worse Derek Jeter snuck in. I think that's appropriately where he should
Don't
be.
Don't say that name. Don't say that name. You said the name. All right. Well, LGM listeners, we are delighted to have had you with us this evening, and hopefully everything will work out at the Super Bowl, and at least one of us will be right. And thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you again for listening to the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast. We would like to thank Elizabeth Nelson of The Paranoid Style for supplying the music necessary to make this podcast possible. You can find this track and the rest of The Paranoid Style's catalog anywhere you can find good music. If you would like to support the Lawyers, Guns, and Money podcast or any other aspect of the Lawyers, Guns, and Money project, please visit us at www.patreon.com/lawyersgunsandmoney or donate through a PayPal link on the main website. Thank you again.